I really enjoyed, Ted, what you shared this morning. Because revelation without transformation is just information. And I can tell by what you shared this morning that you've had some revelation because it's brought change. And, wow, I love this atmosphere. We have a different atmosphere in here this morning than we had last night. It's a wonderful, wonderful atmosphere. Because we really are beginning to experience what many of us have believed for years, and that is we are Christ on this earth. It's no longer just a theory, or it's no longer just something that we're hoping for, but at least in a degree, even a small degree perhaps, Christ is being formed in us. And for that to happen, boy, we have a lot, as Ray said, we have a lot to get rid of. I've been teaching from the book of Galatians now for about a year, because I feel at least in this present day that we're living in, it's one of the most important books that we can understand, because religion has been our problem since the day we were born. We were born into religion whether or not you ever stepped inside a church. There's people out here who have never stepped inside a church who is full of religious thought. And many of them don't want to go to church and won't have anything to do with God because of that religious thought. And one of the first things that the Apostle Paul said to the Galatian church is that Jesus had delivered us from this present evil age. And then he goes on to tell about how he'd been delivered from religion. But when I first realized that Paul was talking about being delivered from religion, boy, that's amazing. Yet that has been our biggest hindrance to walking in the reality of what we know is our religious mind and what we've been taught. I often ask people, why do you believe what you believe? Why do you believe that you're Christ? Why do you believe that? Do you believe that? Or why do you believe anything? Most of us, the majority of us, believe what we believe because that's what we've been taught. Remember I shared last night, I believed for years that Jesus was in me, yet I lived a miserable life of separation and alienation in my mind, believing that Jesus was in me because I had the information, but not yet the revelation. Because revelation always brings transformation. God cannot give you a revelation without transformation taking place in your life. And that's the thing that saved me from an imaginary person. And I use the word imaginary because I lived an imaginary life almost all of my life, thinking that I was this weak person who loved God, yet not able to even do some of the smallest things that a Christian was supposed to do. And so I lived a life of separation and alienation for years. And until I had a revelation, and we all will have that revelation one day, but that revelation simply is going beyond the knowledge of it, but having the revelation, as Paul said, when Christ separated me from my mother's womb and revealed his son in me. And I'll tell you, there's multitudes of people today who have the knowledge, but have never had the revelation. Some people who are even running around saying, I am Christ and I am God, have never had the revelation. Because revelation brings transformation.
Yes.
See, when I hear about Maddie, I mean, I don't even have to meet her. She's had some revelation. And the way Ray spoke this morning, see, that's not information. If Ray had not had some transformation, how would he dare to stand up and boldly declare that his word would accomplish that? See? And that is what God is bringing us all into.
Yes.
But again, the thing that hinders us is our religious thinking and our mind. You know, there are only two men in the universe. And one of them is real, the other is imaginary. That is the truth. That's the truth. And our only problem is dealing with that imaginary person that we think we are and that we've been taught that we are. And that's why we have to go to really understand who we are. We have to go back to Genesis. And, you know, God can give you all this without the Bible, but for me, I have gotten, even today, I mean, God reveals to me who I am through the scriptures. Very plainly reveals to me. So I'm not a legalist, and I don't just believe in, you know, just the black and white letters. In fact, I disagree with some of the black and white letters. I've vigorously disagree with some of the stuff that's written in the Old Testament. But yet, in the same way, I can read that, and I can read it as an allegory. I can read it as God revealing his will and intention to me, and it takes on a whole different concept. See? Because I believe more than anything else, I mean, if you just read, especially the Old Testament, and you just read it with the literal mind, man, that makes God out some kind of a monster. If you're living in an Old Testament with an Old Testament concept of God, your concept of God is no different than the terrorist. Because their God tells them to annihilate what they call the infidel. Well, that's what the concept of God was in the Old Testament, that they did ethnic cleansing. And I'm telling you, until our concept of God is changed, we will never go beyond the knowledge of good and evil. Because we think God is good and evil. In Genesis chapter 1, God created a son. He created a son. But what we haven't realized is he didn't create one man, one individual man. God, in Genesis chapter 1, God created a man, but he created a corporate man. Genesis 5 said that God created man in his own image. Male and female created he them. Well, who were the them? You talk about your identity. If you don't have a revelation of this, you'll never really know for sure who you are. Because you were that man created in Genesis chapter 1. All of us were there. The sons of God that shouted for joy at God's creation. And then we're taught by religion that when we're born into this world, we're born sinners. I'll bet you were taught that if you went to church. Isaiah 9:6 says, unto us a son is born. No, I'm sorry. Unto us a child is given and a son is born. Well, I know that was talking about Jesus, but listen, that son was a corporate man in the very beginning. A child can be born, but a son can never be born. A child was formed in Mary's womb, but a son was given. And your mother had a child formed in her womb, but a son was given. That's who you are. You're not some being that was, you know, brought together by a sperm and an egg and come out a human being. You came out lost to your true nature and identity. You had no clue or no concept about who you were. And then, even if you weren't religious, you were taught and you were raised in an environment where you knew nothing but good and evil. They're good people, and they're bad people. And depending upon which side of that fruit that you displayed was how the world judged you. Never knowing that a son had been given. Because if you know When your children are born, if you know the truth about their being, you'll realize that God has given you a son. And you will raise that child as a son. And you won't let that child believe that they are alienated and separated from God. And there are young children today on the earth being raised in that consciousness. In the very beginning, God created. You know, in Genesis says, everything that God created was good. Everything. We don't have a problem until Genesis chapter 2. When man was formed. And the man that was formed in Genesis chapter 2, the man that lost his awareness and consciousness of who he was, that's the man, and that's a corporate man, and that's the man that's responsible for all of the evil in the world. But we blame God. And those of us who believe in God's absolute sovereignty believe that God created everything, good and evil, and all the mess we go through, and all the heartaches, and all the cancers, and all the rape. God is behind it all because, you know, his ways are beyond our understanding. How could you ever stand up as a son and declare the truth if you have such a confused concept of who God is? And see, that's what Jesus dealt with when he came on the scene. And that's why he'd say things, I know what your scriptures say. I know it is written, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I say unto you. And see, we have to do the same thing today. I know what the scriptures say. I know what the King James Bible says. But you see, I believe it was Ray mentioned last night, someone did, that the concept of God and the concept of Jesus that we've believed, most of us, all of our lives, is a false image.
Absolutely.
It's not the truth. And can you imagine Jesus in his day coming on the scene and telling everybody that they believed wrong? I mean, he might not have actually said that, but he did. Their concept of their father was wrong. And so Jesus came to show us exactly what a son, how a son lived, what a son was like, and how a son related to the father as one, not two. And that song we sang this morning, when he was on the cross, you were on his mind. You know, the cross, really, if you understand one of the aspects of the cross, will show you the oneness. See, we are all one. There's not two, there's only one. There may be many, many expressions of the one, but it's only one life. And see, that's why even Paul said in the New Testament that if you hurt, I hurt. If you suffer, I suffer. Because we're all one. There is no distinction and no division. And so the one on the cross was the all. And at the cross, all of us died to that imaginary man. Oh, you say, if that's true, how come we have such a mess? Because we haven't understood. Like I shared last night, I was told my old man was dead, but, you know, and I quit reading the scriptures for probably a few years because all they did when I read them was condemn me. I'd open them up and I'd read, well, he that is born of God does not commit sin, neither indeed can he because he's born of God. Man, that just put me in the grave because I was sinning like everything. Not enjoying it, not wanting to, but I was full of it. And then I'd read, if any man is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away and all things have become new. Wipe me out again. I believed it. Well, because we're taught to believe the scriptures. But when I look at my life, as my old man isn't dead. And that's why we have to have a revelation of who we are. And not just the information. See, I can tell you all day long, your old man is dead. But without the revelation, Because we are created in the image of God, whatever we believe, whatever we confess, we create that experience for our lives. Every one of us in this room have all created who we are today by what we've been taught, by what we believe, and by what we confess out of our mouth. You are a product of your own creation.
I believe that, Gary.
Not too many religious people will tell you that, because you know what that does? That puts the responsibility where it belongs. Ted mentioned the church that I used to go to. In fact, Carol and I have been a part of another one that we raised up ourselves. But where the presence of God was so strong. When Carol and I were pastoring in Oregon, people used to walk on our property and just begin to weep, because they sensed the presence of God there. Even after we left that area, there was a couple from California came up looking for a retirement home in Oregon, and the church property that we pastored on there was a beautiful piece of property. And so they were driving past the church property, and they saw a for sale sign. So they turned around to go back to look at the property, because, like I say, it was a beautiful piece of property. And the man told me after he bought the place, he said, "My wife and I stepped out of the car." And he said, "The minute my feet hit the ground," he said, "I began to weep. And I told my wife, we have to buy this place because the Spirit of God is here." That's nothing we did. Well, you can't say it isn't something we didn't do, because you see, wherever the substance of God is,
yes,
that's what we have to somehow. And I don't know how to get this. I know how I got it. I don't know any other way than to realize that you know, we've been living a life for years trying to convince ourselves that we are something, but yet we can't live it. We believe it. And the biggest reason we can't live it is because we're still looking at ourselves as something other than what God is. Now, out of our mouth, we're saying, you know, "I am God," or "I am Christ," or "Jesus lives in me," or "I've been regenerated." We're saying that, and we're believing it with our intellect. And that's what's wrong with the church world. You see, that's why all of us Christians, whether we're IMers or Third Days or Pentecost or Catholic, no matter what we are, we're all reading the same Bible and all coming up with all kinds of arguments and bickerings and fightings and different answers. Now, you know what? That is okay if we learn to love one another. Because I can read the Bible or the scriptures, and God will speak something to me through that, but that's for me. And our problem is, when we hear God speak something to us, maybe from the scriptures or whatever, we feel that's what he's saying to the body. And so we believe that everyone, because God has showed me it, and he showed me this way, then that's the way you have to be.
Yes.
And it's not that what you're interpreting is wrong, but it might be wrong for someone else. People tell me once, just an example, people tell me once in a while, because I'm a coffee drinker, I like coffee. So people tell me occasionally, "Well, you know, God told me not to drink coffee." And just the way they say it, you know that, well, you shouldn't either, because God says it's not good for the body. And I believe God probably did tell them not to drink coffee. But God knows everything about us. And we're all made of from different, what do you want to call it, DNA or whatever. We're all different. So maybe if you drink coffee, it'll kill you. I think God might tell you not to drink it. I use the illustration a lot of times with my mother. She was a very proud woman, loved God with all of her heart, always went to church, but she was very proud. And so she wouldn't wear makeup. I mean, she wouldn't go to the door even without her makeup on. If somebody came to the door in the morning and she hadn't yet put on her makeup, she wouldn't go to the door. She would not let anybody see her without makeup. But one day as she was in before the mirror putting on her makeup, God literally spoke to her. She heard him speak and he said, "Woman, wash your face and don't put that makeup on again." Well, why would he do that? Because of her pride. Now, he didn't tell every woman in America not to wear makeup. He told my mother that. And I believe he's told some other women that. So then we have a holiness movement that don't allow women to wear makeup. Because he's told some of them not to do it. I think my mother went about 2 years. Until that, you know. She was completely over that pride thing because she had, what could she do? God said, don't wear it. But one day as she was in the bathroom, God spoke to her again. And he said, you can put your makeup on now. And she started using it again. See, this is what I say all of us folks. We got to hear God for ourselves. Don't tell me what God told you to do or not do and then expect me to do or not do it. I always tell people, you know, I want with all my heart, I want people to experience what I do. And that might sound like a pretty egotistic statement. But I experienced the most wonderful life.
Yes.
And the substance of all that he is being formed within me.
Yes.
And why would I want to settle for some information that makes me feel better, but yet inside I'm still hurting? And I'm still trying to believe. And the only reason we're still trying, again, is because we haven't had a revelation. Don't tell me you've had a revelation if you're not experiencing walking in the kingdom. And that doesn't mean that there's nothing wrong with you. Doesn't mean that God is upset. It just means that you need to be honest. And I'm not looking for God in the flesh either. You see, I don't believe that Jesus himself displayed God in the flesh. He did one time at the Mount of Transfiguration, but even then he was transfigured. But, you know, if he really manifested God in the flesh, do you think there would have been so many reject him? People don't recognize Jesus in the flesh today because they're looking for a certain image.
Yes.
They think they know what he should look like.
Yeah.
Oh, he wouldn't be sick. He wouldn't be, you know, he wouldn't have any problems. But see, we never met the man. All we know is what we've had built in our minds concerning him. None of us really know if he ever had an ache or a pain. None of us ever really know if perhaps he might not have had a physical ailment a time or two in his life. We don't know that. But we're told that, you know, he was the perfect man, which he was. But if there's something wrong with us, then we think, well, we're not measuring up to the image, and so there's something wrong with us. You'll never see God in the flesh. You have to see him in the spirit. And if you see him in the spirit, you can find him in a drunk on the street. Boy, don't that blow religious minds. But there are only two men in this whole universe, and the scriptures are all about revealing the truth of those two men. I've spoken for hours on these two men. And we are living out of the source of one of these two men. You know, the problem with most of us is we're schizophrenic. That's true. I experience it even today. We're schizophrenic. When, you know, when we're feeling good and we're reading the Bible and we're talking right, you know, everything is okay. But when we have a bad day and we get into unbelief, All that proves is we just slipped from one identity into the other, from one consciousness into the other. That's what God is laying the axe to the root of the tree. I don't hear a lot about fire today. Yet that is the only thing that will deliver you from the imaginary man that you are, is fire. Isn't it funny that when you come into the temple, the first thing you come up to is that altar of fire in the Old Testament tabernacle? Why? Because you're not going to get in the presence of God without going through the fire. But on the other hand, if you have a perception, a correct perception of yourself, a revelation of being that spiritual man, then you're already right there in the middle of that most holy place. You're not out here in this outer court of a human thinking trying to enter in, but oh my God, you've revealed to me that I am that holy place. The Most High God is rising within this temple. You know, that's the only thing in the temple, the curtain. It didn't keep people from going in. Kept God from coming out. It just represents the flesh, see? That curtain is a representation of the flesh. And so the flesh just represents that it's keeping God's lock in your inner chamber. And so to break through the flesh is not to stand out here in the outer court and try to get into the holy place. It's to stand in the very presence and the awesomeness of God and let Him flow into your temple until He fills every fiber of your being. Isn't that what we want? Those two men end up being two cities in Revelation. And one thing I like to point out about the mystery Babylon, the great harlot, is that she looks really good. She has gold and silver and precious stones in her. Gold represents divine life. Silver represents redemption. Precious stones represents transformation of the inner man. So Mystery Babylon really is a culmination of people. It's really the whole world. It's a religious, the world, all the systems of natural man is a culmination of Mystery Babylon. But in Mystery Babylon are some precious people who have learned to walk to a degree in divine life. And they know about the glorious redemption of the cross, and they have some transformation in their life, but they're still caught in that system of religious thinking.
Yes.
Now, I'm not talking about churches or denominations, because you can be a Baptist and not be in Babylon. I should say you could go to a Baptist church and not be in Babylon. I mean, if you're a Baptist, God loves you. But if you've got that, you know, we've been taught this theological stuff. A Baptist reads the same Bible as a Pentecostal. Yet to him, the devil's got a hold of you if you speak in tongues. But if you're a Pentecostal, a lot of Pentecostals will say that the Baptist's not even saved because he doesn't speak in tongues. And that goes on and on and on in our Christian world. And Jesus said, this is the greatest indictment against the people of God. You shall know them by their love.
Yes.
Not by their correct doctrine. Many times people will get on my website and they'll write to me and they'll say, well, what is your statement of faith? In other words, what do you believe? And I always write back and say, I have no statement of faith in what I believe. What we believe, why do you care what I believe? Let me put it that way. Why do you care? What if I do believe in speaking in tongues? Why do you care? And why don't you believe in speaking in tongues? Because that's what you've been taught. So our greatest need is to take that time. And it doesn't have to be a time that you just stop doing everything else, but I'm talking about in our daily lives. Well, the scripture says this, in all thy ways acknowledge him,
yes,
and he shall direct thy steps.
Yes.
See, religion will try to make you think that to really gain God, you have to spend 3 or 4 or 5 hours a day in prayer, and you have to read 10 scriptures a day, and yet you don't have to do any of that. But there's something in us, you all will relate to this, there's something in us that is crying out for reality. Don't tell me as a Christian, and especially in the information that we have today, that you can be satisfied when you can't even get along with your wife. How dare you claim to be Christ on the earth? See, that's what I mean about we have to have substance with what we believe. And the first step in gaining the substance is to be honest with ourselves. Because I'll tell you, God doesn't even look at your disobedience. He really doesn't. Do you know why? Because he knows who you are. Whatever you're doing, you can be religion might think you're the scum of the earth. You can be anything in the earth. You could be a prophet. You could be anything. It doesn't change who you are. And that's one of the first things I began to realize as one who was striving to be holy and not able to make it, is that God spoke to me so clearly about who I was and what he was doing in my life. And he said, I look way beyond where you are today. I look way beyond your mind, your emotion, your will. I don't even see that, but Gary, I look deep on the inside. And I see my seed that I planted there. I see a son. And God has spoken to me this way. He said to me, you may not see it, but I see it. And you'll never know a love like my love that will never, we've heard these words, but you need to hear him speak them. I will never leave you nor forsake you. If you make your bed in hell, I am there. Why? Because I'm in you. I'm so much a part of you. I'm not only a part of you, I am you. You see, this is not about Gary becoming God. You'll never take this human image of yourself, this false identity, this imaginary person, and make it godly. That is the crux of all of our problems in trying to do that. You'll never change. Well, you know what? You can change that image of yourself. You can, through psychology, through counseling, you can take one who has a bad image of themselves and build a good image of them so they feel good about themselves. Guess what? Still in the wrong tree. It's not a bad matter of feeling good about yourself. It's a matter of having a revelation that I am a son. I came from the very portals of God's glory. I was a son given so that I might bring peace and love and compassion into a lost and a dying world. That's who I am. And when I say that's who I am, that's who you are. All of us, we are a son given. But when we're born, a strange thing happens, is that we're born into this physical world. And when we go through that, what I call a sleep or a death, you know, preachers say you have to die to yourself. Listen, we died to ourselves when we left the portals of glory. And while we slept in the womb, the enemy planted the tare. Remember that parable, the wheat and the tare? We used to think it was the good guys that was saved and the terror was the bad guys out there. Or maybe they were the Baptists or the Catholics or something. But the seed was planted in the same field. And the terror is the false image, the imaginary person that you believe yourself to be. That's the terror. And what did God say at the end of the age? He's going to send angels reapers who would pull out the tares. That's what's happening today. God is pulling out that false image we've had of not being quite good enough. I've been walking this way for years and I still can't make it. But when we realize that we can and we will make it once that revelation hits us. And you say, my God, what can I do? I've been a Christian for 90 years and I'm still... It doesn't matter. What matters is that we become honest and not try to hide beyond what we say. Now, I know that we need to have a positive confession, because when I was still living a life of sin and disobedience as a Christian, I began to learn how to stand up within my temple. And I began to say, Father, I thank you that I am holy. God, I thank you that I know that the seed that you planted within me is a holy seed. And I'm so thankful to know that the fire of God, that your holy fire will burn in me and consume all of that ugly stuff. But I was still doing it. So I'm not saying that you have to quit doing what you're doing for God to give you this awareness, but we just need to be real with ourselves. You can't use positive confession to hide the negativity in your life. I just thank God. There's only one thing that God requires, one thing. And he has to give it to you. And that's that desire. I used to tell people, you probably heard this, some of you. I used to tell people when I pastored the church in Oregon, I don't care what you do. I don't care whatever kind of a lifestyle you live, I don't care. Doesn't matter to me if you're a prostitute. You can come to our gatherings and I will never tell you that you cannot prostitute your body. But I'll guarantee you this. If you will come and you will sit amongst us, that you will be changed. And we've had people all over the world now call us and tell us how they've been released from all the different hang-ups and problems that we all have. Why is that? Because they're beginning to see, not settle for a doctrine, but whatever it takes. And I don't know what it takes for each one of us, but whatever it takes for you to get that revelation, you need to go to God until you get it. Until you can stand with boldness and say, the word that I speak will not return unto me void. That's where the church is going. That's where we as God's people, I'll tell you, across the land today. Now, I said last night that I've seen a lot of nonsense in our ranks, and I have. But then I see the formation beginning to take place of a people who love you regardless of what you're doing, regardless of what you believe. People who are beginning to love with that unconditional love. Because we know, again, we know that what you're doing does not change who you are. And if I know who you are, then I can minister to you without any guilt or condemnation, without ever telling you, without ever correcting you outwardly, without ever telling you you can't do that. We minister to that seed of Christ, knowing who they are. And as that revelation begins to dawn within them, and we can speak that revelation into their hearts, and as that day star begins to arise, they'll find their lives changing effortlessly. How do I know that? That's what happened to me. When the day star began to arise, you remember, I'll close with this, but Peter said, we saw him on the mount. We saw him literally transfigured before us. And his face shined as the sun. But Peter said, we have a more sure word of prophecy than that.
Yes, he did.
You see, if you today, if Jesus would come down these aisles and you would see him in his transfigured light body, it would be a wonderful thing. But there's a much greater revelation that can come to you.
Yes, yes.
And Peter said that's when that day star begins to arise in your heart. When the day star arises in your heart, that's a more sure word than you seeing Jesus walk down these aisles. Because when the day star arises in your heart, you realize the oneness that you have, not only with the Father, but with all of creation. That we are one nation. We are one life. People talk about, you know, there's only one Spirit. Only one. And we are all of that one Spirit. This concludes this message. For additional tape copies or for more information, you may write Sigler Ministries, that's S like Sam, I-G-L-E-R, P.O. Box 26695, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, 27114. Or you may telephone us at area code 336-775-4930. Our web address is www.sigler.org. Our email address is orders@sigler.org. All of our tapes are distributed at no charge as finances permit. These messages may not be sold, but you may duplicate them freely for distribution. Many have asked us where to obtain the beautiful music at the end of our tapes. You may write Linda Musgrove, that's M-U-S-G-R-O-V-E, P.O. Box 111, Cunningham, Texas 75434 for information concerning her music.
True identity. I'm removed.